You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to the WESA Retail Roundup. I'm Glenda Geek, founder of the Horse Radio Network and host of Horses in the Morning for the last 16 years. It's the only daily show for the horse world. And we've been doing this show for a long time, too, and we're talking about everything to help a retailer or small manufacturer out in this world, and this world is getting more complicated by the day. So hopefully this content that we've been giving you every Thursday here for the last several years helps you run your business a little bit better. Today, I've invited two of my friends from the equine world and two of my longtime friends from the equine world here, and we're going to talk about the Dover situation. We thought, well, it's hot right now, and it's also really applies to small manufacturers, medium manufacturers, and every retailer in the country, and everybody's talking about it. And that includes customers are all posting and talking about it. And I thought, who better to have on the show to talk about this than Rose from Equus Now, who was just on an episode on April 2nd. If you missed that, go back and take a listen to it. We talked about running a retail business, and we also went through the history of online retail in the tech world, too. Rose, thanks for joining us from a new location.
Thanks for having me. Welcome to Galena, Ohio.
You got a new house. Congratulations.
I did. I lived in Powell for 20 years. I moved about 10 miles north, and I'm going to have my horse at home. So I'm very excited.
What she's not telling you is she just moved last weekend, and this is the only clean part of the house is the window behind her. Everything else is full of fog.
Why do you have to out me? Okay, nobody would have known that.
And we've all moved, Rose. We all get it. And next up, also joining us from the manufacturer point of view, is Mary, VP of Sales at Carrots. Hey, Mary.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Glenn. And always good to be here with Rose.
I asked Mary to do this because we've known each other for a very long time. Yes. And also, you're one of the most respected brands in the equestrian world. Everybody knows Carrots. Yeah. Everybody loves Carrots. I have never heard anything bad about Carrots. So, and I would tell you if I did, and I really haven't. And Rose, you agree with that? I mean, Carrots, they're just Carrots a good company.
They're wonderful. If I had to tell you my top three vendors to work with, Carrots would always be in the top three. They're wonderful people. It's a pleasure to buy from them.
Well, and you. They keep expanding their product lines and giving you more reasons to buy from them. So there's that, too. Well, let's talk about Dover. All right. So Dover is a 50-year-old company, and all three of us sitting here probably 10 years ago would have never guessed we'd be having this conversation that we're having today. But I just want to go through a tiny bit of the history over the last couple of years of what exactly happened, because I've seen a lot of posts that are just wrong. They're just incorrect as far as the process of what happened in their collapse, let's say. So they were acquired by a private equity company, Promus Equity Partners, in 2022. And then what happened is there was a takeover struggle, actually, in 2026. They were under debt. They had a lot of debt. And part of that came, I think we all know why. They opened 1 billion stores, and that was very expensive to do. I think Rose and I had this conversation years ago that we kind of didn't make sense to us to open all the brick-and-mortar stores they did. And what happened in 2026, because of the debt, is they were taken over by their primary lender, which was an arm of Prudential Financial. So a lot of people don't realize Prudential, the insurance company, even when I was selling insurance and investments way back when, Prudential was a huge lender to mostly corporations and businesses. And they then quickly put the company for sale on a deep discount and a fire sale, and that's where the Gordon brothers stepped in. They are a venture capital company. They stepped in. It was an investor group. Their thought was to keep it going, and I think they realized very quickly that it was just hemorrhaging money and that they weren't going to be able to do that. So that's when the announcements came about a month or two ago that they were going to liquidate and close the stores and lay off, lots of employees and all of that. And they have not, another misconception is they have not filed bankruptcy as of this date, today, when we're recording this. That could change. All indications are they're leaning that way, but who knows? I don't know when they get out of this sale that they're having for everything. They are going to reap some rewards from all of the sale of everything that they're putting out there. Is it enough? Probably not to cover everything that all the debt they have. So, you know, this, before we go more into the Dover thing, I wanted to go a little bit back in history. Some of you will remember this, some of you won't. I know the three of us here do, is we kind of went through this before when I had my tax shop and when Rose, when you and I were first starting online, actually, is the Miller's Isers went out of business. And that was huge in our industry back then. Weatherbeat bought the Miller's brand and the wholesale side at that point. And I don't think a lot of people remember. Guys, who bought the retail side? Dover.
Dover
yes. bought meal. How we're coming around full circle here. And if you remember, Manhattan Saddlery wasn't Manhattan Saddlery back then. That was a Miller store. That was Miller Saddlery, and it was bought out, and it's still run today under Manhattan Saddlery. But that was a Miller's product then too. But that was a time when a whole bunch of product was dumped onto the market as well. It was a similar situation, except Miller's was wholesale and retail. They did have both, and they were one of the largest wholesalers back then. Would you guys agree with that?
Oh, by far. Absolutely.
They were it. Pretty much.
They were number one.
And Isers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Isers was their big competitor, which was interesting. So when Miller's went out, the person that bought him bought Isers because his plan was if he bought every company out there, there'd be no more competition.
Right.
So, look what
That's
happened.
Right. And yeah, shortly after that. Mary, yes. were you guys dealing
with
them?
It was a little
then?
Bit before me, but Isers distributed carrots. So they were the distributor of carrots.
Now, what happened for us personally is we made out quite well because we lived in Pennsylvania. So we actually took our huge truck up and filled it up at the warehouse up there. So we benefited from some of those discounts to then resell. So we had a little bit.
That's how Equus now really got its name, is that we bought out a tremendous amount of inventory from that deal. So it definitely had lots of positives for many of us.
We are not here today to whine about Dover, to pick on Dover in any way. What we're here to talk about is the opportunity that now exists because of the Dover situation. And the reason I brought up Miller's and Isers, and Rose, I'm glad you mentioned that, is because in every one of these situations, there's opportunity. You can whine about it, you can complain about it, but then you have to look at where the opportunity is in it for you. And so, Rose, let's start there. We've heard a lot about the fire sale. There's been a lot of posts online about shopping locally and don't buy from Dover. Don't buy at the discounts. Discounts aren't that great yet, but they will become great. They're going to go to greater discounts as we go along. It's just the way it works. And how it will hurt retailers across the country. What's your thought?
Well, you just, as far as the shop local movement, I love that. I am absolutely in awe of the people that are coming out to really shop local. I mean, our store alone in Columbus and Cincinnati has boomed in the past 2 weeks.
I wanted to ask you that. Yay.
Yeah. So I really think that's a great thing. And I love that movement as a whole. As far as the fire sale and the inventory dispersal, one of the very first things I did is I went onto the Dover website to see what they have. Like, what do they have? And I encourage everyone to go see what they have that's worried about all this inventory flooding the market, because there's nothing there. I mean, you can get a helmet in a 6.5, you can get a helmet in a 7.5, but there's no core sizes. So there really is not a ton of inventory that's going to affect your sales. So don't put too much stock into that.
They were selling down before all of this anyway, right? So, and you know, every business going out of that knows they're going to go out of business does that. You know, that they're selling down.
I was in Aiken this past January, and the Aiken Dover store was one of the better stores. It was lovely. It was similar to the New Jersey store as far as scale and inventory. And I walked in, and there was one pair of tailored sportsman breeches in the whole store sitting all by itself on this rack that could fit 50 pairs of pants. There was one pair of tailored sportsmans. There were two pairs of socks. There was one Briar horse. And this was before everything came out. And I asked the gals that worked there, who were lovely, I said, "How's business?" And they said, "Oh, it's good. Business is good." So if you couldn't tell that was going to happen, I don't know what you're looking at, but there was nothing left in the store.
I got to say, though, I've been to our Tractor Supply locally, and it always looks like they're going out of business because there's always so many empty spots at the Tractor Supply, too. So, Mary, I wanted to ask you, let's switch a little bit. We're going to come back to the retailer side, but also from the vendor side, there's a lot of especially smaller to medium-sized vendors who Dover was a big account, right? And like all big accounts, they tend to normally have a long payment schedule. It's 3 or 4 or 5 months before you get paid. And then, you know, we're getting into this cycle and they're adding to their order, they're adding to their debt. And as a vendor, you're going, okay, should I take this order even though they owe me a lot of money and I don't want to lose them as a customer? It's always that tough balance there, right? How does a vendor not get in too deep with a big company like this and then also keep their relationship going?
I mean, that definitely one seems tough. And that timeline you give is certainly a longer one than any manufacturer would really like to extend.
But we've all seen it.
We're fortunate that we have long-term relationship, and we do actually offer terms to all of our retailers. So Dover actually didn't have any special negotiation with us that any of our other retail partners didn't have. So, I mean, we were in a fortunate position in that way. But I do get how it would be challenging for some of these smaller brands when I know we were speaking a little bit earlier that it is kind of this pinnacle of getting into Dover Saddlery and like, what does this look like for my brand and the exposure kind of on the national platform? Because really what was nice is that 34 doors of the retail location and that multiple exposure with one retailer. But I think what kind of happened even starting back at COVID for at least us as a larger manufacturer, our dependency on Dover has really been reduced. And a lot of that has also happened from the strength of other stronger retailers across the country that have really stepped up to the plate as well. So we've kind of diversified as a manufacturing partner on where we look at our sales. And so that's really helped insulate us in the marketplace.
We have always talked about the Walmart effect, right? Walmart's your big customer. It's 90% of your business. Walmart drops you. Now you only have 10% left. It's so important for everybody to have this. If you had 50 of the smaller ones and one Dover, then when Dover goes away, you still have the 50 smaller ones, right?
You do. And we are very fortunate that we have over 250 active retailers in the U.S. And I would love to keep building that up and keep really using this as an opportunity for retailers to step up to the plate, especially in locations where these stores are closing, because at the end of the day, our Dover business was strong and there are customers out there that are going to be looking for places to shop and especially places to shop in person. So that's so great to hear from Rose that the local market is great and people are coming in. Like, so how can we keep driving that more?
So, Rose, what do retailers have to do now to pick up that Dover business? Do they have to do anything different? Do they look at adding to a line? What do they look to do right now or just be there and build and be that community source that everybody is talking about these days, right?
I think all of the above. I think that the concept of just sitting there and waiting for people to come in is totally ridiculous. That no matter how long you've been around, you have to be an active marketer of your business. You are responsible for getting people in the door. And the fact that people are going to Dover and not coming to your store, there's a reason for that. You have to get them in. You have to create events. You have to create a level of fun. I mean, people go to places that they feel good. And if they don't want to come in your store because it's the same old stuff, they haven't seen anything new, well, that's on you, you know? So you really have to constantly change your inventory, change your merchandising, go out to Barnes. Jack Levy, I'm going to quote him because Jack used to tell me, Rose, this is the easiest industry in the world because you know where your customers are. And he's right. You go to the horse shows, you go to the barns, you talk to them, you create a relationship, and you really have to work on building the relationships with your local professionals to grow that your local business. The two are symbiotic. They definitely have to work together.
I look at it this way, the big online retailers, the Chewy's and Amazon's or any of those, they have customers, right? what a smaller operation can do is they can build a community. And there's a difference between a customer and a community. And actually, I think Carrots did a really good job of building community before that was even a thing. I think you guys did a terrific job of building community because there was brand loyalty there, but there was also community there.
I mean, we definitely try, and we try to make it all about partnership and kind of like going off of what Rose said. It's definitely events and just anything that can drive traffic into your store, even if you don't think it's a monetary event, because that gets people coming in. And then I would piggyback on that for the retailer to really lean on your manufacturers. And like, we are always happy to partner with you to do anything. Like, you just need to ask. Like, we recently did a Cool Core Tight giveaway. Like, it was no purchase necessary. All the retailer had to do was sign up. And the intention was for people just to go in and sign up to win a pair of tights. This was a nationwide campaign. Anyone could win a pair of tights. Each store is able to give one away. But all it is getting people in the store. Hopefully they'll buy something when they're there. But really just like, what can you do? We are happy to sponsor this. Like, it's just all about the conversation and the communication of what else can we do? Like, what's the next idea? Like, what do we need to do? Because like, we are only successful if our retailers are successful. So we just have to keep that communication going. And that's certainly like what we want to do as a manufacturer and a brand.
Rose, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think what Mary said about leaning on your vendors, that is something that's available through literally every vendor, you know, that you do any sizable business with. And they want to be partners. They want to do things in your store that's going to promote their brand. Okay. So think about it. It's such an inexpensive way to market that brand by that brand sharing, whether it's product or marketing promos, but use them. It's free. It's a free marketing and pair up your events with those brands. You know, Christy at St. Croix, she's done a lot of great events that are married to vendors. So she'll do an Equinavia weekend. And the whole weekend is devoted to that brand. And that brand's going to furnish lots of prizes to drive people in the door. Think about how you, as a retailer, can market that vendor. Okay. And think about it. That vendor is truly thinking about marketing dollars. How much are they getting out by giving you their product? And the more you can market, the more they're going to give. So that's a key thing, is marketing.
So let's switch gears again. Mary, I wanted to come back to how long do you extend out credit before you go, okay, that's enough, you know, to any retailer? Is there a time that you do 60 days? Are there past 60 days?
I mean, our standard terms are net 30. So net really 30. That's all that we offer. And really, like, beyond that, we are following up and checking in with an account and really not.
Are you selling them anymore after that? Are you selling them anymore after that? If they're late?
It depends. And it really is about communication. So it's, and I always say this with a retailer too, it's back to the partnership. Like, if you're communicating with our accounting department and we have a plan or something like that, then we're always going to work with you as well. You know, if we have payment plans in place or things like that, like, again, it's going back to be successful, but we do run a pretty tight ship on how our orders come in and go out as far as payment is concerned.
And I think too, due diligence here, right? From a vendor point of view, we all saw this one coming a while back. I think if I was a vendor, I would have been apprehensive to do that additional order when Dover placed it and I already had them at 90 days, right? Because you could see the handwriting on the wall. I think due diligence and being aware of your customers also is, and that's easier than ever now than it ever has been in the past, is that due diligence.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think having kind of like guardrails with your customers on all things, just because you want to make sure, again, back to partnership and communication. So it's a lot of the same words, but it's really just having this open communication and touching base on all fronts. And like, we have a great team in our office that is willing to work with you and talk about everything. And it's really that open conversation that keeps things going as well with us. And that is much better than silence as well. Like, if you're having a problem or you need an extra 5-10 days or something, just communicate that with us. And then that's like way better than not answering the phone or answering an email from our accounting team's point of view.
How big was Dover currently? I kind of, in my mind, it kind of went out of my mind. You know, more of the Chewies and the Smart Packs and the Amazons of the world, right, were more in my mind than the Dover was, as compared to 15 years ago when everybody got the catalog, right? It was, everybody was getting the catalog.
I mean, Rose could probably speak to this a lot more. Like, yes, they had stopped doing like their big mailer for us as a company. They did some core product and then a very like narrow assortment of what the Carrots brand is now. So
were they going more really to private label anyway, weren't they?
And then they did a lot of private label. Yes. Yeah. So for us as a brand, we actually now see that as an opportunity.
Rose?
Again, this is a little bit out of my wheelhouse because I don't have any access to any kind of numbers. You know, when they were a public company, it was very easy to get accurate data. The last I heard, they were doing about $82 million a year. I mean, that's a sizable amount as far as if that's valid or not, I don't know. But I do know that from the vendors that I work with, they've said the same thing as Mary, that they really have bought very lean buys of certain products and from name brands, and the rest of them were truly private label products. So I think that people are in the same situation as Carrots as far as your bigger vendors, that it really was narrow and deep as opposed to broad.
Yeah, they used each brand for like a specific purpose and like the target customer for what they wanted that brand to showcase.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit too about the other thing that's been totally thrown under the bus in a lot of these posts. And the posts were well-meaning. I'm not saying they weren't. And they really were trying to drive traffic to local stores. And the local stores that had Dover in the area should be doing boom-up business right now. They should be very happy about this whole situation. I know that the stores in Ocala are probably very happy because they were going to open a huge one at WEC, and assume that's not happening anymore. So, and we got good stores here. We have the Tack Shack and, you know, Seminole. We have some really, we're really lucky in Ocala, actually. We have like 20 tack shops within 10 miles a year. Venture capital companies, private equity firms really have gotten thrown under the bus. And I just want to make a comment about that, having been in the investment world for a long time, is they're not all created the same, just like anything else. There's good and bad in everything. You know, sometimes we cover on Horses in the Morning, we'll cover a discipline and we'll get 10 emails about how horrible that discipline is, right? I don't care what it is. And our response always is, I could say that about any discipline in the horse world. There's bad actors in every discipline. We all know it, right? And what you try and do is work from within and without to eliminate the bad actors. But that's 10%, 5% of the whole community, right? In whatever discipline we're talking about. It's true of anything. It's just true of human people, right? There's good and there's bad. And so this private equity firm, maybe not the best, and obviously mismanagement was along the way, and there was a lot going on there. I've dealt with some really good ones. You know, I sold the Equine Network. Equine Network is owned by a private equity company, and it's been terrific. I've been here for 4 years. How many principals sell their company are still around 4 years later, right? That never happens, and they've been very good to me. Now, it's been sold again, so, and we're hoping from all the research I've done that that's another good company. So, but yeah, you know, you guys have seen this too, and you have some experience with that too. Mary, you have any experience with that?
I mean, Carrots actually has been privately held for 9 years now, and we have wonderful owners, and they are fantastic and supportive. And yes, it's private funding, but I don't think they should be grouped in the same way that people negatively speak to private equity. Like, they buy brands they believe in and build it into a portfolio that they want to continue on with, and have been nothing but supportive. And also, I think what's been really important for us is they keep the people in place. So it is the same people in our company that were there when Carrie founded it, or many of the same. But I think that that's a lot of what's really helped as well for like the decision making and driving what helps Carrots be successful. But they really like let the brand flourish in that regard.
Yeah. Rose, I don't know if you have anything to add to that. I just wanted to get that point across.
Well, I, you know, I like, just like Mary said, I think that the private equity buys where they haven't changed things, where they haven't gutted the company and brought in their own people. You know, they bought the company for a reason. They saw something in that company that they really wanted. Why would you gut the company and change everything? I mean, just let them do what they're good at and maybe offer some advice here and there. That's great. Yeah. But yeah, they're like Mary said, there's good ones, there's bad ones. This was an example just of a really bad one with the Dover situation.
Well, and two, I think they set out to, they don't buy, you're right, they don't buy a company to lose money. They want to make money. That's the whole deal, right? Whether they're doing it through income now or selling it later, that either way, they want to make money. They don't care. Not all of them are good at managing the vertical they bought into. And I think that's kind of what happened here. They just weren't good at managing the vertical. And a lot of the Dover people left that actually knew what they were doing. So it was kind of a situation that was destined to fail eventually in this case.
It's a difficult niche. I mean, we're truly a niche market. And I mean, if you don't have knowledge in this particular niche and you're running a company and you don't have that support team to really guide you, I can't see success in the future. You really have to have knowledge of the sport to be successful.
I've always said, and I've gotten trouble for this over the years on air saying this, but horse people are different. They're different.
We are. We're special.
And the industry is also like, and we say this a little bit like with fashion, but we're a little bit behind too. So it's also like trying to now use our tools to catch up. And I would also encourage retailers to use their tools. Like there are lots of tools out there and that will help propel you as well in continuing on this journey. But meeting the customer where they are, but you don't have to do it alone. There are things that can help you.
Right. And we've had episodes here on AI and how that is a tool that can help. It's not an evil force. It's a tool that actually can help you. All right. We're going to end on this. What does the future hold for retail in the horse world? Is there a place for smaller tack shops that can survive? We see a lot of them going out of business, right? Can they survive? And then the follow-up question is, can they survive without online sales? So, Mary, I'm going to start with you. Is there a place for smaller tack shops, new smaller tack shops, people coming into the world?
Absolutely. Yes. I've already said it once, but Dover is a very good customer of ours and had strong business with Carrots. So I think this is a huge opportunity for whoever is willing to grab this opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, I think, multifaceted. Whether it is around the locations that are closing, whether it's so existing stores that are near there, if someone chooses to open up new locations in those places, obviously there's an online presence as well. And then just really meeting the customer wherever they are now is what it needs to be. And then I'm sure Rose will segue way more into what is really needed for that omnichannel presence, because I do think that's important.
Well, that's definitely, well, for us, you know, Equus now, we've always been omnichannel. We started online and then we went into the brick and mortar sector and any possible avenue to sell, whether it's mobile rig, anything, eBay, like we were part of it. And the benefit of doing that is that if you have like a stock portfolio and if you have a stock that's down, the chances of all of your stocks being down at the same time are almost impossible unless there's a market crash. So you could be down in the store, but your online is going to be up and vice versa. The mobile rig thing, I mean, for small stores to get into the mobile rig business, it's such a great idea because you don't have the overhead. And the idea of going to Barnes and your rig, that's needed. I think that that's definitely growing. And customers like it. They like to shop at horse shows. They really do. So there is plenty of room in this industry for people to get into it. I am very positive about that.
I'm going to switch it up on you, Rose. What's the thing they shouldn't do when they're getting in? What's the mistake that the ones who don't make it make?
Where to start? I have so many things. I've always wanted to do like a tack shop nightmares, like going into stores, you know, like in that show. What's his name?
The kitchen nightmares.
I would love to host Tack Shop Nightmares. A big thing is stop buying from everybody. You know, pick your favorite vendors, pick your top vendors that have the biggest selection. and do more business with them. I think that you're gonna really dilute your market by carrying everyone's stuff, and you're gonna have overlaps. Find the people that you really like and buy because you like them. That's how I buy. You know, I like my vendors that I buy from. That's a big thing. So
I think the other thing too to go along with that is they tend to underestimate their clientele in the dollars they'll spend. So they tend to buy the medium to low end products and don't carry the high at first, when yet the people will buy the high if you offer it. And I think that's a mistake too, is not having the three categories there in some form.
You always have good, better, best, just three. If you have more than three in the same product line, you get redundancy. But that it's such an easy trap to think about shopping out of your own wallet. You have to get that out of your head. When we started our company, our number one most popular helmet was a Troxel. Okay. This is back in the 90s. Because in my mind, like, no one's going to spend over $100 for a helmet. Well, that was ridiculous. You know, we put in the GPAs, and at that time, I think they were $350, $400. They sold like crazy. So it really, you have to stop thinking about what you would personally buy yourself and just open up the gamut, because otherwise you're really going to put yourself behind the eight ball.
And that's a hard thing to do when you're first starting a business, isn't it? It's really hard.
It took me years.
I will also follow up with core is king, like keeping your core product in stock. And it might not be the most fun and exciting, but your black medium tight is going to turn and turn and turn. And you always want to have that in stock, because if you don't, that's where you're sending someone to another retailer. So there's some very simple things like keep that core product and then curate your assortment to what your local community wants. But having your core product in stock, and that's easy, and replenish like little and often. And that's where, again, leaning in on your manufacturer. Like, we love to put together programs of fill in. We will give you free freight. We will do whatever it takes to make sure that you have that product in your store consistently, so that you're not walking that customer out the door to another location to buy. But it's kind of the easy, not exciting product, but it's what makes you dollars.
So I shouldn't have all purple tights? Should have some black ones.
The purple tights? Well, they're fun and they draw the customer in to look at the rack, but 9 times out of 10, someone's probably going to buy black.
Yeah.
And customers will only... Think about it. Okay. So you have a customer that came all the way to your store. Okay. And you don't have what they want. How many times do you think they're going to come back to your store? I mean, maybe two if you're lucky. But if you don't have your core product on hand, you have to eliminate stockouts. And there's so much software out there that's practically free that will track your inventory and prevent stockouts. Yes. And it's the best investment you can make. Just keep your inventory that's turning always in stock.
And I think Mary is right. I think manufacturers are better at working with retailers now on that than they ever have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's easier for them to do too, as far as technology is concerned.
Oh yes, we want to keep working with you. It's not just a one and done. Like, it's like, let's work on a program. Let's get this going.
Mary, final thoughts.
No, I think we've talked about it a lot, but I think it's really just being nimble, and I think also just being open to change, because we know that everything changes very quickly. But if you're willing to adapt to the environment and kind of do what it takes, because you can't totally just sit back there and expect it to fall in your lap. But if you're willing to put a little bit of effort into it, there's a lot of opportunity to be had.
Rose?
100%. I think that you can't sit back. You have to work at it, and you have to constantly try. You constantly do better. Just do better. I mean, it's okay that you've been around for 20, 25 years, but what more can you do? What can you do as far as relationships go? And this industry and relationships are key. Get your relationships solid with your local market, and the local market will support you.
I can't say it any better than that. Thank you both for joining me. I really appreciate it. And everybody, there's a lot of opportunity here right now. You just have to be there to take it. And a lot of this is attitude, too. There's nobody more positive in the retail world than Rose, I don't think. I've not met too many people more positive than Rose in the retail world. And also Carrots. You guys have always been one of the most positive companies out there since I met you, 20-some years ago, right? So, you know, you guys have always been that way. And I think that's part of this, too, is I do see a lot of negativity online and posting, even from retailers. And that's not helping you. You know, I don't want to make this a psychological thing, but I just want to say that your mindset really does make or break your business, because that's what gets across to the employees, which eventually gets across to the customers. So be the Rose. That's what I'm saying. I guess that's what I'm saying. Be the Rose.
A lot to live up to.
So Rose, don't screw it up. Okay. Thank you both. Mary, where do they find your products?
Our products, all of our 250 wonderful retailers across the U.S. and some international as well.
And they buy from you? Just go to carrots.com?
You can purchase at carrots.com too, but I'd like to support our local retailers.
And Rose?
Yes, equusnow.com. Check us out. Use coupon code WELCOME10 and get a discount off your very first purchase and free shipping over 200. So come on. And if you ask a question, it probably gets answered by me.
Yeah, and that's when she's not unpacking the boxes. She's going to be busy with that for the next couple of weeks. Thank you for joining us at Wes's Retail Roundup. If you missed part of this, it will also be available on the podcast player at Wisdom by Wes. We're there every Thursday with a brand new episode for you. They also have their own website, wesatradeshow.com. The trade show's coming up, guys, believe it or not. 2 months, and the August show will be here. It's crazy. We just went to January. I don't know what happened. But, you know, we're here every Thursday, so find us on your podcast player. You can also find us on YouTube and all the other places that you go. And search for Retail Roundup on Facebook as well. Thank you to Wessa. Thank you to both of you. And thank you for joining us today. And go out now and sell a bunch of stuff.